Business and Labor. Good morning, all. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 821A.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 821A permits collective bargaining units and public employers to establish a retiree medical trust of voluntary employees, beneficiary association, health reimbursement arrangement, or any other health care agreement for the health care expenses of employees or retirees. The measure also exempts the school districts that are subject to coverage under the Oregon Educators Benefit Board and also requires that all agreements must comply with the insurance code. There is an emergency clause in the measure effective upon passage. It passed unanimously out of the Commerce and Workforce Development Committee and the Senate floor. Members, you do have a fiscal impact statement in front of you, and it is indeterminate.
Brian DeLashman, Anna Haas. Come on up. Oops. Tell us what we're doing here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Brian DeLashman. I'm here representing the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees. I'll be exceedingly brief. There's actually a bet on whether I can do it in 3 minutes or less. Under a quirk in the bill, current statute, last time that the negotiations occurred between the Oregon State Police Officers Association and the state and the Department of Corrections and AOCE, they found the statute that even though both parties wanted to allow for the establishment of a retirement medical trust or a health savings account so that the employees can contribute into a trust that will pay for health care upon retirement, the current statute would not allow that. This bill just simply allows that to occur. The money contributed by the employee is pre-tax dollars, so it saves the employee dollars. It is also a pre-tax dollar to the employer, so they don't have to pay payroll tax on it. The results, everybody's happy. I have a chart in the back. This is for Representative Edwards. Last session, he always commented about when I made charts. He said he liked the way I made charts and simple. But what you've got is a state trooper, tax-free dollars going in, medical trust established. It grows tax-free. You have a happy, healthy, retired state trooper at the end, and that pays for health care. And the state, I apologize for the design of the Capitol building, but the money spent is not spent for payroll taxes. They can buy more services. That's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann?
For the record, I'm Ann Hannah, so the Association of Oregon Counties. I don't think I can top that. Mine will be brief, too. This is a great innovative idea that has the potential for easing medical costs for retirees and taking advantage of federal cost codes. We're supportive of the bill. We note that it would be a voluntary agreement to be negotiated, so we urge your support. Thank you.
Brian, I think last session and even the session before that you had it. You used visual aids comparable to this, if I remember right.
Yes, that is correct.
Representative. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Zan, what was
it?
Ann. Thank you, and Brian, for bringing this bill forward. And as a sponsor, I think this concept is something that is long overdue. We could have got there in some other ways, too, and we can talk about that if we would just have HSAs. And I know that Marion County here, as part of their plan, offers high deductible HSA health insurance for their employees. Why this, when counties are already doing it, why do we need this bill to help the counties?
I understand that this clarifies the law and makes sure that it is legal. So, I mean, some have interpreted it as I believe that, you know, they can do it. So the state, I think, took a more conservative interpretation of law. So as long as this is very clear that we can, in fact, do it, then we're fine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, that's exactly true. We believe that the state, through the AG, interpreted the statute one way and said that the state could not enter into these kinds of agreements. However, county councils around and city councils have, in fact, interpreted the statute different. And many jurisdictions, including Marion County, Clackamas County, a number of cities, already have these kinds of plans. It's saving everybody money.
It does, but more importantly, it provides ownership for your health care down the road, and that's what we need to really help people with. And I know that there's been a bill in, it just sits here every session, that would require PEB to offer a health savings account type plan. So my question is, if we pass this statute, how, with the federal laws, because there are certain requirements before I can open a health savings account or trust account for high deductible plans. Have you gone down that road to see, okay, we passed this law, now how do we get to the next step to allow state employees to contribute to a health savings account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, we have not explored that option with PEB. The types of plans that we were looking at, especially a retirement medical plan, were held in trust external to the state, so it would be like an insurance company holding the money. However, putting it in PEB or having all state employees have that option within PEB is a very viable option, and I think this bill, although it doesn't specifically say that, leaves that option open to be explored, and I'm not too sure that we couldn't have that discussion with PEB during the interim to see whether or not they would be willing to set that up. Obviously, they would have to be able to recover the cost of whatever the operation is out of the trust itself. But this potentially could save us millions of dollars in state government.
Thank you. And provide great health care further down the road for a lot of people.
Exactly.
Thanks for bringing this forward. Representative Esposito.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the concept. I would like to see it be extended, if we possibly can, to all employees. Great stick people, Brian. Great stick people.
My major was not in
you mean
design.
You were an art major? You're kidding me.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to retire. I was going to draw the retired state trooper in a boat, but I couldn't figure out how to draw the boat and have the stick person. So.
Oh, that's very smiling.
I'm glad we settled that.
You know, healthcare savings plans are great for those who have some money to save, but they don't help those who don't have any money to save.
Yeah, so that's true.
Any further comments or questions before I get me in trouble?
Thank you very much.
Anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 821A today? Seeing no one, I'm going to close public hearing and open the session on Senate Bill 821A. Do I have a motion?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 821A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves Senate Bill 821A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition on the motion? So moved. But carried, Representative Cameron.
Thank you very much.
Close work session on Senate Bill 821A. Open public hearing on Senate Bill 867A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 867A authorizes accounts that are licensed in other states to practice public accountancy in Oregon without notification or payment of fees to the Board of Accountancy if their requirements for licensing or qualifications are substantially equivalent to Oregon's requirements. The measure also codifies a Board of Accountancy permit fees at annual rates of $160 for initial application for renewal and $175 for business organizations. The measure also provides authority for the Board to censure an accountant that's licensed in another state or to discipline a Oregon licensee for their actions in another state. The measure has an operational date of January 1st, 2010. There's an emergency clause in the measure effective upon passage. In your packets, members, there is a letter of opposition from Kent Bailey, who is a Board of Accountancy member from Baker City. And you also have a -A3 amendment from the board. The measure would allow the board to authorize a licensed public accountant based in our state to practice if they meet the state's requirements and comply with the requirements of statutes and administrative rule relate to accountancy, and also establishes an exemption for paying the annual fee if the license holder is either an employee or owner of a business organization that's registered with the Secretary of State's Corporation Division and notifies each client of their relationship with the business organization.
Thank you. I'd like to start with Mr. Steve McConnell, please. Go ahead, sir.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Steve McConnell. I am an Oregon CPA and a member of the Legislative Policy Committee of the Oregon Society of CPAs. Your committee administrator did an excellent job of summarizing the basic law. You have before you our written testimony, unlike the prior people, I don't have a chart. I do have a map, however.
Good. Thank you.
So, over the last several years, it's become apparent that with the increasing cross-border practice of accountancy and business, that it's important for businesses to be able to select CPAs, whether they be specialists or otherwise, who originally are licensed outside of the state. And as you're likely aware, attorneys, CPAs, for that matter, drivers, are individually licensed by the state. CPAs must pass a uniform national examination, and we're subject to common standards of practice. And so, although we do not have a national licensure, we do have a lot of commonality between the various states. And it becomes relatively simple to practice between states, but for the licensing issue. So over the years, a number of states, including Oregon, have tried to ease this licensing process, but the impediments that remain involve primarily individuals, and the individual notification of the Board of Accountancy and the payment of fees in order to practice in the state. What we're doing today in proposing this bill and in supporting this bill doesn't primarily benefit Oregon CPAs, except indirectly. What's happened is that, and here's the map, 42 states have passed this kind of legislation in order to make it simple for individual CPAs to practice in the state and still to support the licensure and enforcement requirements, and they are appropriate requirements, of the different states. So in accordance or in a coordinated effort between various state societies, including the OSCPA, the American Institute of CPAs, and the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, this bill and this concept in mobility has been introduced and passed in states, as you can see, including Washington, Idaho, and Nevada. Now, let's make sure that the public is protected. And to do that, the proposal specifies that CPAs automatically, by reason of practicing in the state, accept the rules, regulation, and jurisdiction of the Board of Accountancy. The Board of Accountancy has full disciplinary powers in the same way that they would have over Oregon licensees. So essentially, this is a no registration, no fee, and no escape situation for CPAs who are officed outside the state. This doesn't apply to CPAs who come from states who do not have the same kind of educational and other licensure requirements that Oregon has. That's what the term substantially equivalent means. Not all states are substantially equivalent, but by far the majority of them are. California isn't. And until California passes the educational requirements, they would not fit under this particular rule, people licensed in California. There's also registration requirements for out-of-state firms that provide auditing and certain other high-level services in the state, and this, again, is in accordance with the statutes that have been passed in these other states. Again, regardless of whether there's registration or not, and the registration, again, applies only to higher-level services such as audits. Regardless of whether there's registration, the firm, as well as the individual, is automatically consenting to the rules, regulations, and jurisdiction of the board simply by practicing in the state. In other words, we think this is a simple, straightforward, seamless way of going about creating mobility, and it's one that is integrated with other states in the country. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. McConnell? Rep. Sam Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. McConnell. I was interested to hear your side. I was looking at the, I don't know if it's the Board of Accountancy, but anyway, there's the people who are against this say that they would not be able to, I guess, assess penalties or otherwise, do something acting upon your license if you didn't have a license here in the state. I'm just wondering how you would respond to those who are, well, I'm sure this has come up in other states, people who are opposed.
Representative Thatcher, Chair Schaffler, that's correct. It has come up in other states, and it has been looked at a national level. We have also had an independent firm, law firm in the state, look at the question. We believe they do have jurisdiction. There are admittedly practical issues. If someone comes in and practices in the state and then leaves the state, you have the practical issue of getting a hold of that person. The statute provides that by practicing, the person from the other state accepts the idea that, or accepts service of process to that person through their Board of Accountancy. We believe that works. Now, if somebody has, and incidentally, these issues are going to come up by reason of a complaint from somebody in the state. So if somebody in the state complains, they're going to know where that person is because they will have had an engagement letter from them, they will have gotten bills from them, and so forth. That person can be found in that other state. I don't believe that's an issue. And by the way, that issue exists today. We really believe that our bill makes it clearer that the State Board of Accountancy has jurisdiction, not less clear.
Follow up?
Please.
What do you mean it exists today, that situation?
Well, currently, the individual has to be licensed in the state, but they still are officed outside the state. So the fact that they're licensed in the state, if they aren't in the state and the state board wishes to discipline them, they still have to go to the other state.
There's plenty of professionals that outside of just this, outside of accounts, that my wife in her dental practice, she has a classmate who's an oral surgeon, and he's a renowned expert, and he lives in Utah, and about once every other month he'll come up and do several real hard cases in her operatory, and then he'll fly home. I mean, if he did something wrong, God forbid, it would be the same thing. They'd have to go to Utah to go after him. But he's a consummate professional, and that's not going to happen. Representative Holvey.
Yeah, I got a question just specifically. If this bill allows accountants to come into this state and, you know, practice accountancy, but isn't required to notify the state of Oregon in any way, you know, it seems like there's a potential that you could have people in here operating as tax preparers, accountants, or whatever without the state's knowledge. And, you know, we the consumer really wouldn't know whether this person is a charlatan who isn't licensed anywhere. And can you help me through that?
Okay. Representative Holy, Chair Schaffler, that's right. That's very true. Unfortunately, that also exists today. You know, anybody can come in and practice in this state and claim that they're a CPA, whether they are or not. Now, is that against the law? Sure. Would that be against the law under this set of circumstances? Sure. I don't believe that there is any difference in the potential of that occurring under either particular provision. They're supposed to notify the state now, but there are countless examples in this state and other states where CPAs have practiced in another state, probably by accident. They haven't done it deliberately, but they nevertheless should have been licensed in that state and weren't. And this makes it very clear that by act of practicing, they're subject to our laws, whereas under the existing situation, it's not so clear. So we're pulling those people in. We're giving the board the opportunity to discipline those miscreants where, under the current set of circumstances, they may not have that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can appreciate that, but at the same time, as if they're not required to even notify the state that they're practicing in Oregon, as a consumer, I could call up the state and find out whether or not this guy's real, or, you know, whether he is, you know,
had his credentials checked or whatever, instead of doing it after the fact when I, you know, find out there's a problem. It seems like I'd be able to, you know, call the state. Oh, he, you know, he has, I, you know, I don't care if he pays fees or anything, but at least he should, you know, register with the state so that the state's aware of who is operating in this state. And as a consumer, I think I ought to be able to go to the state and find out if the guy's legit. I mean, I understand reciprocity, and we have it in a lot of different industries, but most of them, most of those industries require some sort of registration or notification to the state that you're operating within the state boundaries. I don't care if he's licensed in Pennsylvania or New York or wherever, but at least we would have the ability to know that as a consumer, I can call up and, oh, this guy is registered, he's legit, even though he's from Kansas, you know, instead of not knowing, I guess. It seems like you're opening up a whole vast opportunity for the charlatan.
Representative Holvey, Representative Schaffer. Yes, that's a possibility. We pride ourselves as CPAs in a set of hurdles that one has to go over in order to practice. That includes, in other states, for example, as well as our own state, meeting certain ethical standards. If that person is practicing, let's use Kansas, if that person is practicing in Kansas and is a charlatan, the chances are that Kansas already knows about that person. And since he's officed in Kansas, anybody who works with him is going to likely have a card and can call Kansas, as well as calling our state. So I believe that the consumer still has the ability to find out. Yes, it's a long-distance call, but unfortunately in Oregon, it's probably a long-distance call here, too.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Well, we just went through where there was a report from the GAO office recognizing the state of Oregon and our tax accountancy board and our rules and regulations and standards. And albeit, you know, I may have some faith in Kansas or I may not in their particular standards. And so, you know, I guess I'm just a little uncomfortable going, well, let's just rely on some other state standards. As a consumer, I'm not sure exactly what those standards are. They may be just, you know, hang a shingle and have an office. I don't particularly know as a consumer. And so I would have a lot more faith in having our state at least be aware of who is operating within this state. I mean, it's my opinion. I know this bill passed with a lot of votes on the Senate side, but I'm having a little trouble with this. I'm okay with reciprocity, but I do believe there should be some sort of notification or registration of those people that have reciprocity that are operating the state, and I don't believe this bill provides that.
Representative Holdy, you're right. It doesn't, and it doesn't in 42 other states as well. So we believe that by providing this national approach to things, and among other things, the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy is actively working on creating a database which also will be accessible to consumers to allow them to be able to look across state borders to determine who is licensed to practice and in what state.
One last follow-up, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, and you know the other 42 states and that don't do this either. I would suggest that maybe those other 42 states should come up to our standards instead of us going down to theirs.
Mr. McConnell, Ed Hodgson is our accountant, and he's the best damn accountant in the state of Oregon. No offense to you, but I've never checked out on his credentials. Nobody does. If I had a corporation, I might. I don't know how many people call about Dr. Sinceri to make sure she graduated from OHSU with a dental degree. And for those who are so diligent, and God bless those that are, all I do is call the great state of Iowa, which I do have great faith in, and say, does Steve McConnell have a license there? And I think this is a good, positive bill, and I'm soon going to entertain a motion to pass it as it is. But in the meantime, Representative Matthews and Esquivel and Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is regarding multi-state corporations. It seems like in the global environment or economy that this is about trying to make it also easy on the corporations and customer service-wise. Is that kind of your take on this, to allow the accountants from a firm in Kentucky to work on the same firm in Oregon and then to transfer back and forth? Is that how that would work? Or what's the current practice now for state to state?
Representative Matthews, Chair Schaffler, you're right. Increasingly, companies do practice across state lines. And also increasingly, firms, accounting firms, have niche practices. So it may be that there is a company that is in a particular industry that wishes to use a firm that has a particular niche specialty that is in Kentucky, and the firm has a branch or has an operation in Oregon, and that right now that Kentucky licensee would have to become an Oregon licensee. And the purpose of this is to allow that Kentucky licensee to practice in Oregon without having to go through extra special steps. Sometimes it is even more difficult because something comes up very quickly and it becomes a little bit more difficult for that licensee to get properly licensed in the time that things take place. Business happens fast these days.
Thank you.
Representative Esquivel, then Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is our testing any more significantly higher than any other state? And then I guess my next statement would be, I don't have a clue what my credentials of my accountant is. All I know is he does a great job.
Representative Esquivel, Chair Schaffler, we all pass the same examination. It's a national uniform examination. So the first hurdle is identical for all of us.
So you have a state exam and a national exam? You just have a national exam?
It's a national exam. It's administered by the State Board of Accountancy in each state. In addition, with respect to many of the standards of our practice, they are uniform as to accounting standards, as to auditing standards, and virtually all the states utilize the same set of standards. So, although we are licensed in different states, much of our practice is focused, and of course when we're dealing with the Internal Revenue Code, that's a national kind of thing as well. Codes of conduct vary somewhat, but I believe that all of the codes of conduct in the various states, although I haven't studied all of them, are uniformly high. The primary difference has to do with the educational hurdle, and we require 150 hours of education in order to qualify to sit for the examination. There are a few states that require less than that, and those states are not substantially equivalent, and therefore they aren't going to fit under this scheme. However, those states that aren't substantially equivalent, most of them are moving towards substantial equivalency, including California.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McConnell, in those states where there is not substantial equivalency, is it up to the individual CPA to determine that there's a lack of equivalency, or does our state make a determination and say that practitioners from the following states are barred from reciprocity, or how do those mechanics work? Who makes the determination that there is not substantial equivalency in the instances when it's not?
Representative Witt, Chair Schaffler, at this point, the State Board, I believe, makes that determination. However, that information is available through NASBA as to what states are substantially equivalent, and under this provision, it would be up to the individual to understand whether or not they are coming from a substantially equivalent state. That's not going to be difficult to determine, however.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as if I were a CPA, it would then be up to me before I practiced in another state to know myself whether or not my credentials are substantially equivalent to the state which I'm intending to practice in.
Representative Witt, that's correct.
Okay.
I might point out, however, that by practicing the way this bill is written, by the act of practicing in this state, they are accepting the jurisdiction of the state board, right. And if they've messed up, the board has authority over it.
I understand. Thank you.
Any further questions of Mr. McConnell before we move on? All right. Thank you, sir. Now I'm going to hear from, according to my sign-up sheet, some folks that may have a different opinion. Mr. Jim Gaffney, Ray Johnson, Pat. Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Morning.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Gaffney. I'm the current chair of the Oregon Board of Accountancy, and with me is Dr. Ray Johnson, the current vice chair, and Pat Hearn, our executive director. Thank you for the time here today and the opportunity to speak against Senate Bill 867. On behalf of the board, I'd like to tell you that our board is unanimously opposed to 867 for some of the concerns that you heard questions directed to a moment ago. This mobility provision is the vernacular name for what 867 is part of a parade of Uniform Accountancy Acts that we've been dealing with for over 10 years. And the concept is not a bad one. The concept of uniformity within our profession across the states is not a bad one at all. And we have embraced those. We've taken them seriously. We've studied them. We've helped enact many of those provisions as they've come along to make it easier for citizens of the state of Oregon to have the best and the brightest talent available to them that our profession offers. This particular provision we've studied with the OSCPA, the Oregon Society of CPAs, for over 2 years. We've met with their national people from the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, with the AICPA people. We've wrestled with these provisions. We agree with a large part of it, but there's a part of it that concerns us, and on the advice of our Assistant Attorney General, in an opinion that we provided to you, we see problems with a large part of this, and that's why we continue to oppose 867. The issue goes, the fight goes to out-of-state licensees. We break those into two categories. Most of those out-of-state licensees have some permanent connection with the state of Oregon, primarily through an office. If their firm that they work for has an office here, we don't have any problem with that. That office, because they have an office here, already has to register with the Board of Accountancy, which we think gives protection to the public that needs to be there. They also, under other rules that are administered by the Secretary of State, have to designate an agent, a resident agent within the state, that can receive service of process in case there's any civil action that a citizen determines they want to bring against a CPA within the state. So that's completely off the table. We agree with that. It's not that way now, and that part of the of 867 we would like to see implemented, and we've provided a dash A3 amendment that we think accomplishes that. The part that we have concern with are the out-of-state licensees that have no connection with the state of Oregon. They can come to the state. It's not a technology issue. They can come here from California, from Florida. They can provide services to someone, a citizen of the state. If that citizen feels that they've been wronged, there's two avenues of recourse. One is through our board. And the all of the discussion that you've heard, all the discussion provided by the supporters of this bill is limited to what the Board of Accountancy can do. It doesn't address at all the issues of what the civil action that citizens can, what the limits on the civil action that citizens of the state can bring if they feel that they've been injured. The concept
And Mr. McConnell alluded to this, the analogy they like to make is to the driver's license, where someone with a California driver's license can drive through Oregon completely within the law. And what happens there and what they want here is that there's complied consent to the jurisdiction of the Board of Accountancy and all that. If it works, that will be fine, but it's untested. The states that have approved this, in large part, have done it only recently, and there's not enough history to know how well it works or not. And the other thing that we have with respect to driver's license, we have interstate compacts. They're the steelwork that makes this implied consent work. And we've talked to the national representatives that are supporting this initiative. They acknowledge that that would make it better, that that would cinch it. But their argument is, do it now and we'll take care of that later. Our answer is, there is no rush here. Let's put that in place. We have some other states where we can see what happens with these provisions. Let's get that experience, and we can two-step this. We can do the part that we like now. We can do the part that is still suspect and that has some obvious holes in it and deal with that later. There is no urgency to this. On this second piece, and the giveaway on that is the state of California. They're nowhere near doing this. They're identified as a state where they have pending legislation on this. They're nowhere near it. They're way behind on other provisions that have come through on the Uniform Accountancy Act from years past. And so the history of the Uniform Accountancy Act is that states have adopted the different pieces as they become comfortable with it. We would suggest that we do the same thing here. That concludes my arguments. I'd be willing to take questions. We would be willing to take questions. Dr. Johnson, I think, has a few comments, though, that he would like to make.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like you guys to get your comments on the record, and then we'll open it up for questions.
My name is Dr. Raymond Johnson. I'm vice chair of the board. I'm on faculty at Portland State University, and I'm a licensed CPA in the state. From my perspective, and I think the board's perspective, our concern is not about mobility. This is not about restraint of trade. I think we want to try and find a way to allow interstate practice from CPAs who are outside of the state. Our concern is not about fees. Fees are not an issue, and in part, we take issue perhaps with the fact, we do take issue with the fact that fees are put in statute here, and I don't think that that's necessary. When we started this conversation with the OSCPA, I think we all agreed fees were not an issue. I think what is the issue is the accountability and equal accountability for those CPAs that are licensed out of state with those CPAs who are licensed here today. I respectfully disagree a little bit with Steve McConnell's representations in terms of will we be better under the new bill. Since I've been on the board for about 4 years, we've had several complaints against out-of-state CPAs that were not licensed with us, that have come here to practice and have, we've had filed complaints filed against them and items that we've found that they've been in violation of our law. Under today's statute, those people have recognized, one, that they should have been registered, and two, that we have jurisdiction and that we have jurisdiction here in Oregon. Our major concern about this bill, and it's been brought up by an AG's opinion, is that we would have to go out of state potentially to litigate with some of these out-of-state CPAs, which could be a great cost to the board, and that's our primary concern. I think we're supportive of the Dash 3 amendments. The Dash 3 amendments allow for mobility, but the key issue is registration of firms, and if the firm's registered here, then we have access, and the firm, in the process of registering, it's clear that our board has authority. I think when I look at the current bill, the current version of 867, 42 states I know have passed various versions of them. They're not all alike. This bill has a variety of changes and definitions that are the least restrictive of any state in terms of what firms would have to register. It says, basically takes a position that really only audits or audits of prospective financial information are in the public interest. Other things that CPA firms do are not included in that firm registration portion, and that's a significant concern to us. So we put forward the Dash 3 amendment in a way to allow for mobility. It allows mobility without the fee, but what it does do is it gives the firm registration so that somebody can look up the firm, and it allows us the ability to deal with that firm here in the state of Oregon. And I think those are our primary concerns. Our major concern, and certainly my concern, is the changes in definitions in the current bill. This is really the least restrictive of any of the bills in the state in terms of who really has to give any kind of notice here in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hearn?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have just a couple of comments, and mine are directed more from the viewpoint of the individual who oversees the nuts and bolts of the enforcement piece of the Board of Accountancy's responsibility. And Mr. McConnell has artfully said that there's no escape, that there would be equal enforcement opportunities for a licensee that was licensed in any other state. I respectfully don't see it that way. It would be so if boards of accountancy from state to state were all on a level playing field. They are not. In many states, boards of accountancy are part of a larger licensing agency. While they do have a governing board, they have virtually no enforcement arm at all. I got an email from the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy last week that reflected staffing and budgets for some other states, and I was amazed to see how many states show that their agency FTE is one or two. That's all they have, and that tells me right up front they do not have an enforcement capability. They oversee administration of the examination in their state, perhaps, and they issue the licenses, but there's no enforcement opportunity. And under SB 867, if somebody from another state came in, was found to be in violation, returned to their home state, and especially if it was a state with no enforcement resources, then we would really be have no alternative from the standpoint of enforcement other than to go to that state and seek recourse in their courts, which, of course, would be very cost prohibitive. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hearn. Representative Escobar, did you have a question?
Yes, I do, actually. The indication here was that we have people coming into the state doing accountant work. So with your interpretation, does it mean that Oregonians shouldn't go to other states and do accountant work?
I'm Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar. No, we would encourage that. And
so it's okay for us, but it's not okay for other people?
No, I would encourage it under the, Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, I would encourage it under the same rules. The accounting rules are more lenient than any other profession at this time. And this, the old substantial equivalency, which had notice and fee, $100 in annual registration that was good for a year, 1.5 pages, accomplished that. That was very convenient. I've used it. I've gone to other states, and I've been on the board. I'm very sensitive to complying with the rules of our state and other states. I've used that. We have a large number of CPAs that are using it. There's a revenue impact that the passage of 867 before the fee increase would have cost us $135,000 per biennium in lost fees. That's an indication of the number of people who have complied with that and have found it quite easy to do. Prior to substantial equivalency, we have also a reciprocity license. And the reciprocity license is more of a permanent license. There's it's renewed every 2 years. But people don't have to sit for the exam again. Even though it's a uniform exam, you would have to go through the entire process again. So in order to avoid that, if someone meets and they're more difficult requirements than the substantial equivalency permit, they could go that route as well. But there's every accommodation. We believe very strongly in the ability of CPAs to cross state lines and for the citizens and the businesses of the state of Oregon to have the best talent available to them. We're not trying to limit that in any way.
Follow-up.
Please.
Mr. Hearn, you indicated that you had looked into other states and they had only had one or two full-time employees, full-time equivalent employees. Did you ever call and ask them what they were doing and how they went about their business instead of just assuming?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, no, I have not specifically asked that question.
So you're making an assumption?
Mr. Chair, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron?
Yeah, thank you. Just so I can get a clear picture of this, a single CPA, a guy who's got his sole practice here in the state of Oregon, does taxes here, does preparation for a business. That entity happens to have a business, say, in Washington, files one return for Washington. What does he have to do today as an Oregon CPA to be able to file the return in Washington? For a Washington company.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, I think what we, if I understand it correctly, in the state of Washington, the Oregon CPA does not need a Washington license to file a return. I would also state that Oregon, this board has already adopted a rule that basically, with respect to tax return preparation, if a Washington CPA dealing with a Washington client had business that required an Oregon tax return, they do not need to obtain an Oregon license to file that tax return. So there is currently a tax return exemption. Now, there's a variety of things that CPAs do beyond the tax return area in terms of not only audits, reviews, compilations, and other services. And those other services, if the Washington CPA came to Oregon, they would have to be obtain a substantial equivalency license. Under the Dash 3 amendments, if that firm was registered here, then the firm registration would allow an individual to cross state lines and not need a license to come into Oregon, or not need any and not need any kind of notice to come into Oregon.
So let me make sure. So today, and this goes back to an individual consumer, right?
Correct.
If we're talking about tax returns, a Washington CPA can do an Oregon tax return without registering, without notifying you. So there is no, tell me if that person made a mistake today, how, I mean, that's similar to what this bill does for the whole practice, is what I'm just understanding. So tell me how today you would go after a CPA from another state that we allowed to come here without registering to do a tax return if a citizen had a problem.
Do you want that one? Do you want me to take that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, it would be, it would suffer from the problems that we're concerned about with other practices that CPAs perform. And so there is an exception. And when this mobility first came up, this was the concession that we made a session before this one. And the problem with the tax return preparation is that, one, it's not regulated. You don't need to have a license to prepare federal tax returns, with the one exception, Oregon, unlike virtually one or two other states, is the only state that requires a license here to prepare one form. It's the Form 40. It's the takeoff form from the federal 1040. It doesn't apply to the corporate returns, the partnership returns for the state, and so we're unusual in that regard. But otherwise, there's no license that's required to prepare a federal 1040. Anyone can hold themselves out as preparers. And so we decided a session ago to go along with the idea of making that easier. And the reason it's a problem is that someone in New York can be preparing a federal return for a client who has some enough connection with Oregon that they need to prepare a non-resident Oregon return. And rather than make them come to get the temporary permit in that, it was just easier to carve out an exception for tax return preparation itself. And it does extend to someone who physically comes here, and we recognize that it does suffer from the not having the protections that we'd like to see for the other CPA services, but it is different, and we do agree with that, if that answers your question.
Any further questions of these gentlemen?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I just have one quick one. Can you give me an idea in terms of how many discipline cases that you have now on an annual basis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, it does fluctuate. I can tell you that as of yesterday, since the first of the year, that we've received 47 complaints. I don't have the breakdown on how many of those are valid complaints that result in an investigation.
And those are all out of state?
Oh, no.
So how many out of state discipline cases do you have on a year? Just ballpark it. I know you assumed earlier, but assume again for me, please, if you would.
10 or less, Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews.
Okay.
That's an estimate.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And out of 10 or less, how many of those would you anticipate would actually go all the way through a litigation process that would require out-of-state travel? And I bring this up because you're talking about the expenses associated. I want to get an idea of what we're looking at here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, I really don't have that experience after just 6 months in the agency. I really would just be pulling it out of the air to give you a number.
And then last follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Wait a second. Would you like to answer that question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, from my experience in some of the cases we've dealt with, we have dealt with people from out of state. A lot of that has been handled with both correspondence or they've found a representative to meet with, or they've come and met with the Oregon board. We have not had to go out of state under the current law. Our current law allows us to deal with that here in the state of Oregon. So the board has not had to incur expenses to go out of state.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, there's two pieces to this, again, and I was trying to describe that earlier. One is what the board does, and one is what citizens have available to them through the civil courts to redress their grievances. And so if there's litigation, we have nothing to do with that. What we do is we enter into an agreement with the licensee to hold off on anything that we would do to allow them to have their day in court and not have it be tainted in any way by what we would do. And so we don't, that can be very expensive. There can be all kinds of travelers. All of that is separate from we do. What we're focused on is mainly to try to prevent things that have happened from happening again if we see that there are problems. But we don't really do much to redress the grievances of someone that's been injured. The civil courts are what's available to them for that.
Okay, and then last follow-up, Mr. Chair, just for my info, you talked about the National Association of Boards of Accountancy and how throughout the states it varies with FTEs. How many FTEs do we have in Oregon assigned to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, we have seven.
Seven. Thank you.
Any further questions of these big gentlemen? Representative Holby.
Thank you. You mentioned something that I'm still trying to figure out and has to do, again, with not so much the licensees or the tax accountants, but if a consumer has a remedy through court in the state of Oregon, under this proposed legislation, if we're dealing with a CPA from another state who isn't registered or anything with the state of Oregon, but by acting here, I think under the bill, they're under the Board of Accountancy rules. Does the consumer in the state of Oregon have the same legal remedies available to them from the CPA that would be from a different state who isn't licensed or registered here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hovey, yes. The problem is, as a practical matter, trying to perfect the jurisdiction and to get their day in court. And it's easier for them to have their day in court in the Oregon courts rather than, say, the CPAs from Florida. So if a CPA from Florida comes here, no other contact, under 867, no notice, no fee, no anything, they go back to Florida and someone in Albany feels that they've been injured. They have to serve process on that CPA, and so somehow track them down, serve process on them. That can be very expensive. They can fight the jurisdiction, which may mean litigation in the foreign court before you can have your day in court in Oregon. All of that's avoided if the out-of-state licensee is with registers with the Secretary of State, because when they register with the Secretary of State under the fictitious name rules, even if they're a sole practitioner, it's still treated as a firm. They appoint a resident agent in the state of Oregon, which avoids that. That's the heart of the issue that we're concerned about.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, and I, you know, I'm just looking at other professions, and I know we have reciprocity with, you know, all sorts of folks. Then we have other national testing standards for other professions. I can think of lawyers, perhaps, but and electricians, for example. But I believe in both of those instances, when they come and practice in the state of Oregon, they need to be registered or somehow affiliated with some sort of organization in the state of Oregon. And so I'm wondering, there seems, this is a bigger issue than just accountancy. I think mobility is an important issue that we do need to grapple with engineers and lawyers, electricians and all that. And I'm sure my lawyer friend will probably correct me on something, but I remain uncomfortable with this bill because of the issues involved concerning the consumer not being able to have the same due process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, I hold a law degree. I was a licensee in the state of California before I came here over 30 years ago. That's two sins in my past. But I couldn't become licensed here then or now because I held a license in another state. I would have to sit for the exam here again and go through the entire process of becoming licensed in the state of Oregon. Our profession is much more lenient than other professions, and there's some good reasons for it. We're not trying to be where the other professions are. We're willing to consider the different things that are peculiar about our profession, and we're looking for the reasons to support this. We're not looking for the reasons to oppose it. But it suffers from this key flaw that we need to stand up on.
Oh, thank you. It may be not a great comparison because I'm sure legal matters to consumers are much more important than financial ones. So,
any more questions of these good gentlemen? Well, guys, before you go, you need national standards in every state. The longer I listen to this. No, you don't need a various colored map. You all need to get together, and every state should have equivalent standards and solve this whole problem. I don't want you to leave with thinking, I intend to entertain a motion to pass the bill as it is. And there's a couple of reasons. My brother sat for the CPA test, and that's how we met Ed Hodgson, 15 years ago. And he's an excellent accountant, because Arn, after he passed, you got to go and work with the CPA for X hours and X. Everything I've learned about accountancy, public accountancy, and tax preparation is sitting in chairs like this. It's no small undertaking. The national test is for everybody. That's one reason why I think I'm satisfied with this bill. The other one is this is pretty telling. And if a couple of years from now we come back here and it's all collapsing around our heads and those complaints skyrocket and you got to spend a bunch of money, then I would be definitely willing to return to it, obviously. But if you did have somebody was lying, cheating, busted, and came out here and ripped a bunch of people off and went back there, if you served that person court papers under this bill, you wouldn't fly someone out there, wouldn't you hire someone to serve those papers in that jurisdiction? Yeah, so which you'd have to do here, too. I'm satisfied with my limited knowledge of this subject with this bill, and I just want to look y'all in the eye. But in 2 years, if we find out that we're going to hell in a handbasket around here and all them lying, cheating busters are flying in Oregon ripping people off, I'd be more than happy to amend it at that time. I just wanted to let you know that straight up here. But I really appreciate what you're doing. I respect what you're doing, and you're doing a good job.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. All right. We're going to finish up with Alan Steiger and Rob Douglas.
Chairman Shopton, committee members, for the record, my name is Alan Steiger. I am general manager of Austin Industries in Newburgh, Oregon. I've been a licensed CPA for over 40 years, with the last 30 years of those in industry, 26 years of those as chief financial officer for ADEC in Newburgh. Over the years that I've been in industry, I have served two terms on the State Board of Accountancy, with 2 years of that as chair of the State Board, one term on the board of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and I'm presently serving on the AICPA Professional Ethics Executive Committee, which deals with professional standards and those individuals that violate them. I mention this only to state that I am aware of the role of the State Board of Accountancy and the need to protect the public interest. I support this bill as a consumer of CPA services. This bill allows a CPA who has substantial equivalency, and that basically means they have passed the Uniform Certified Public Accounting Examination, they have the appropriate education and the appropriate work experience, that they would be licensed here in the state of Oregon. This allows me, as a consumer of CPA services, to obtain those services from individuals that are qualified and that I trust. As businesses become more global, more complex, more technology, the needs that I have from a CPA have likewise become more complex, and CPAs have tended to specialize. So this bill allows me to receive those services from qualified individuals without barriers that increase the cost of the service while adding no protection to the public interest. This bill provides protection for the public by requiring those CPA firms that provide attest services, the test services result in a report that third parties may rely upon, to be registered with the state board, and the attest services are the only activity that are strictly reserved for CPAs. Whether CPAs perform attest services or any other service while holding themselves out as a CPA, this bill provides the State Board of Accountancy the right to discipline those CPAs if they violate the public trust or board rules. There have been no documented lapses in public protection in other states who have adopted this or similar language. As mentioned, the language has been supported by the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and the Oregon Society of CPAs. I support this bill as a consumer because I believe it strikes the right balance between trust, freedom of choice, and public protection. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, lobbyist for the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. Joan Buck and I have had the privilege of representing CPAs in Oregon for 31 years. This bill is about two things, equity and commerce. Equity. Oregon licensees, Oregon CPA licensees can currently go into Washington and Idaho and practice the full extent of their practice. Commerce. A lot of commerce is done electronically. We do have a global economy. This promotes commerce. 42 states have adopted mobility legislation. 29 senators in the other chamber voted yes, one excused. Urge you to support Senate Bill 867. Thank you.
Hey, you have a question, please? Good job. Well, seeing none, thank you very much. Would anyone else like to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 867A today? Seeing none, I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 8678. Open a work session on Senate Bill 8678. Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 8678 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves Senate Bill 8678 for a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be a no on this bill. If this passes as public policy, the consuming public in the state of Oregon will only have an opportunity to know who's a legitimate CPA if you're registered in the state of Oregon. All other comers, it's a crapshoot. Secondarily, we are a state that relies to great extent upon the wisdom, knowledge, and foresight of boards and commissions and those who sit on those boards and commissions. I certainly don't have very much knowledge about CPAs or the business they engage in or their trade, but I find it compelling that there's unanimity among this board to oppose this legislation, and for those reasons, I'll be a no vote.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Witt and I firmly agreed there until we started doing the testimony here. And then I have since basically changed my mind, and I'll tell you why. Because if we expect to go out and have our people go out and use other states and be in other states, then we must have some sort of an agreement to allow other people to come into this state. We don't know today, a consumer doesn't have a clue whether you're licensed in this state or not. You really don't. I've never checked and see if my CPA is licensed in this state. Thought never crossed my mind. The other thing is that we have one person in this building that's an elected official that's a certified public accountant. She is in the Senate, and she voted for this, Senator Telfer. So I'm going to go with Senator Telfer's cue on this.
Thank you. And Representative Thatcher?
I just wanted to reiterate that as a consumer of CPA services, I wholeheartedly support this, and as a business owner that has to purchase CPA services for my businesses, I wholeheartedly support this. So.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kinnaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize to all for the matter came up I need to take care of and the missed part of this hearing and some others. I met with the board and talked about this, and I guess I'm pretty much where Representative Escobal is. It strikes me that fairness and reciprocity are perhaps the more important principles, although I have some concerns about the authority of the board and their ability to function, and I guess we can look at that, but it seems to be functioning well in other states, and that to me is compelling.
Thank you. Representative Holden.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I was going to say, at the risk of being the only one in this building that potentially could be voting wrong on this, I guess I'm now perhaps potentially the second one that will be potentially wrong or potentially right on this bill.
I was hoping that was two as wrong.
I am uncomfortable with this bill. It just I fully support mobility, and I think that's really the issue we need to be dealing with reciprocity and mobility. But I think this bill leaves a lot left behind that that concerns me in relationship to consumers, and the idea of the just simple notification and registration of people operating in the states. Is something that's important, and I also am worried about the ability of consumers to achieve remedies. So, in those particular cases, I will be a no. Thank you.
Okay, any further comments? There have been objections, so I will ask Tamsin to call the roll.
Representative Kenmore?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
No.
Representative Escobar? Aye. Vice Chair Barton? Aye. Vice Chair Cameron? Aye. Representative
Edwards?
Aye. Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
No.
Chair Schaffler?
Aye. Motion carries. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill?
All right. Thank you, Representative.
I think we should have Representative Witt carry it.
I think you should have Representative Witt carry it. I think that might be an appropriate punishment.
You're always there for me. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill. And thank you very much, everybody. It was an interesting and enlightening conversation.
Yes.
Close work session 867A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1478.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first heard Senate Bill 147A on May the 13th. The measure requires a landscape contractor license for persons that are maintaining ornamental irrigation systems using compressed air. It also authorizes plumbers to install irrigation system piping designed by either a landscape contractor or a landscape architect. During the public hearing, you were presented with two amendments, and then there was discussion of an additional amendment from the Landscape Contractors Board. So in front of you, you have the A6 amendment, which was from the Landscape Contractor Association. They have asked to withdraw that from consideration. So the two amendments that are in front of you are the -A7 and the -A8. The A7 removes a double exemption from current statute regarding activities exempted from the practice of landscape architecture. And the -A8 amendment clarifies that a landscape contracting business that is operating within the scope of an issued license is exempted from construction contracting law. Both amendments have a minimal fiscal no revenue. And you also have letters of support in into the record from the Central Oregon Cities Association, and Patrick Griffiths, who is the Water Resources Coordinator for the City of Bend, and also from the Eugene Water and Electric Board. Both of these, yes.
Well, we had an extensive conversation on this, primarily around A6, which is not going to be moved today. I would entertain a motion to amend the bill with A7, A8 amendments.
You want to do that in one motion, Mr. Chair?
Or two motions.
Go ahead, just make two. Mr. Chair, I move the dash sevens to Senate Bill 147A.
President Cameron moves dash seven in that Senate Bill 147A. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion to amend the bill with dash seven? So moved, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I move dash eights to Senate Bill 147A.
Representative Cameron moves dash eight amendment to Senate Bill 147A. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 147A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
President Cameron moves Senate Bill 147A as amended to the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Yeah.
Representative Edwards, then Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe staff could repeat really quickly. I was sitting here sifting through my amendments. I don't have my A8s electronically. So what did the A8s do?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, the dash A8 is actually a clarification of the original bill. It was requested by the Landscape Contractors Board and was discussed in committee. What it does is just clarification that the business, landscape contracting business, is exempt from construction contracting law.
Okay, and then the A7s that we just...
The A7 was discussed and presented during the public hearing. There is currently a double exemption in statute in regards to activities that are exempt from landscape architecture, so that clarifies
okay,
that.
Thank you.
Any was there another question, Representative Matthews?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say that the bill as amended without that dash six, I appreciate that. We, you know, our contractors came forward, our landscapers, and that really would have hurt the small businesses of Oregon out there. So I appreciate the work that you've done on this and making this bill, and also the contractors board coming forward realizing that that was the right thing to do as well for us to be able to have this bill we could pass. So my question, I guess, are we still protecting the waterways on the compressed air issue? Was that in the A7 amendment? Is that
Mike,
is that some part of that is
Snyder,
part of the bill? Correct.
Come on up here. Why don't you just come up here, just so people don't see us yelling across the room at one another. Tell us who you are and answer the question, please.
Chair Schopper, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Snyder. I'm the administrator of your Landscape Contractors Board in the State of Oregon. Representative Schaffer, Chair Schaffer, Representative Matthews, yes, that is still, the winterization part is still within the bill. Do not take that out.
Thank you. Any further questions of Mr. Snyder? Thank you, Representative. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the bill or the amendments? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Was the vote of the Senate?
It was unanimous.
Does this merit the consent calendar? What's the will of the committee? I see some heads nodding yes. I see no one nodding no. So be it. We are going to close work session on Senate Bill 147A, and we're going to open work session on Senate Bill 383.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first heard Senate Bill 383 on May 11th. The measure allows a home care worker who is a party in a contested case hearing conducted by the Department of Human Services to be represented by a labor union representative. We were just waiting to follow up on questions that were raised during committee, so there's no amendments, and we're ready to go.
I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, we'll move Senate Bill 838 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. I mean, 383.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 383 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves Senate Bill 383 for due pass recommendation. Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you might recall last time I held this up, had a number of questions and concerns. I've had a very productive meeting afterwards with the General Counsel of SEIO Local 503, who answered all my questions and concerns. I'm perfectly comfortable with the bill.
I believe we have the union and the department in the room. Are there any questions of those good folks?
I do have some questions, and I didn't know we were going to go right into work session.
Okay, well, would you like? Would you like both these folks?
Either. Yeah.
Well, why don't you both come on up here, just so we're ready.
And you can tell Patty O'Sullivan that I wanted her here because I was going to grill her, and I'm disappointed that she's not here.
Sure, I was.
Oh, okay.
She was in the room.
Right? I went on the I wanted it on the camera, my disappointment. Representative?
Yeah, we moved right into work session so quickly. I was still centering myself about around what the bill did and everything. So, okay. So I remember as we spoke about this bill, as we heard, the proponents would say would believe that the collective bargaining unit or the representation has an interest in these contested cases.
Chair Shoffler, members of the committee, Representative Edwards. For the record, my name is Megan Moyer with Service Employee International Union, Local 503. Yes, we have an interest. The interest is in representing the individual, and the individual is the union. And it's a federal understanding of labor representation where we're not a third party, but we're not the individual's private attorney. We are their union representative, and it is established a legal parameter of what that is. So we're not a third party. We're not the individual's representation. We are their union representation. So we represent them in their capacity as the union.
So if you follow. So I guess what I'm wondering is and I don't know, I can't remember what the specific example was, but are some of these contested case, I mean, what would typically be the subject of one of these hearings, I guess, that
for a home care worker specifically, it is the termination of their provider number, which would make them no longer eligible to be a care provider through the Department of Human Services.
Due to some kind of misconduct,
yes,
like breaking the law, abuse, whatever.
Yeah, it could be a number of different things that would have that process started. If their provider number were to be revoked, it is the contested case hearing process is their appeals process.
Okay. So let me just cut to the chase, my concern. And I'm not saying I'm voting against this bill. I just want to make clear that to the extent that family members who are home care workers and they're caring for a family member and they are now represented by the union, I'm wondering to what extent the rules that govern that care are now subject to influence by the union that represents them.
Yeah, maybe I can touch that on that one. I'm Jeanette Burkett. I'm an administrator with Senior and People with Disabilities Division with the Department of Human Services. And the rules, the in-home service rules that basically govern how the program operates and the parameters with which a home care worker acts are the same regardless of whether they're a family member or not, if that helps. So,
but they don't have to take a union representative into these.
No.
Right. It allows them to.
Yeah. Most commonly, a person represents themselves.
Okay.
Less commonly, they have a private attorney, and this just allows them to use an SEIU attorney to represent them and not have to go through the expense of a private attorney.
Okay.
But most individuals actually represent themselves.
Great. Thank you, Representative.
Okay.
Thank you. I guess that was my question. You know, contested case hearings can get pretty complicated, and if we're not careful, people, I see it in other situations, particularly with health boards, where people make the stupid mistake of not taking an attorney with them. Sorry, it was an editorial, but
it warned
too, by God. I mean, it's a legal process. You probably need to be careful you're represented. And frankly, many of these caregivers are not highly sophisticated folk. And I do not mean that as in a demeaning way, but you better understand the intricacies of law if you're in a contested case hearing and you're being accused of some kind of malfeasance or misconduct. And I guess that was the nature of my question, is would the union representative then be an attorney, which is what you suggested?
They could be, or they could just be a lay representative from SEIU, or they could be another person entirely that wasn't associated with SEIU, which is how it works now. I mean, it's in our administrative rules already that a person can have a representative or an attorney or represent themselves.
And I guess that's what I want to ask about the union, because I'm really concerned here. If we're not careful, somebody has their union rep, a nice enough person, but if they're not an attorney, they probably... Well, depending on the nature of the case, made a very bad choice, and they think they're protected when I'm not, and maybe I don't know what your folks are like. Maybe your reps are all attorney equivalents.
Well, I voiced that exact same concern last year. So
Chair Schauffler, Representative Kenemer, to answer that question, the bill does allow for both, but
yes.
I very much agree with the importance of making that appropriate decision, and that each case could be different. We have had one case go to administrative law judge in which it was our attorney who we wanted to represent. That is the precedent for the bills, that we had a statutory issue with that. But the reason we want the flexibility is because we want to be able to have the best person represent, and I would say in some scenarios, it is possible that the person who negotiated the contract and was present in those negotiations, or had helped write the rules with the department, which we have participated in several times, might be the most appropriate person because they can speak so directly to the intent and the language. And we would want to be able to have the best person represent. We do have a legal obligation as a union to provide good representation.
Thank you, Representative Cameron.
I want to follow that up with one last one, and then really Paul has a question. So I'm one of your union members, and I've got a problem, and I don't have much of a clue, and I call your shop, and I say, I'm a member, and I'm being accused of a bunch of stuff. What do I do?
Relief program makers coming.
How's that process going to be answered and dealt with?
Right, Chair Schauffler, Representative Kenemer. In order to be in the administrative... You have to go through this process of contested case hearing. The worker would have to get a notice that their provider number is being terminated. They would then call the union either through our provider hotline or talk to their organizer. Their organizer at that point would go to either their supervisor or higher. We always consult our legal department during any of these. That is always standard practice.
Always?
Yes, always.
That's
what I want. Always our legal department is consulted. There are steps before an ALJ hearing where it may be an attorney, it may be a representative.
And I don't want to make it more complicated than it needs to be, but safeguarding people is...
If I could just say one more thing, maybe to put some of this in context for you. The vast majority of the cases where we're removing a provider number is for a criminal record.
Right.
It's not, the vast majority are not an issue of abuse or neglect or fraud. They're simply the person originally registered said they didn't have a criminal record. We gave them a provider number while pending checking and found out indeed that they did, or they committed a crime after they were working and we needed to remove it. So it's pretty cut and dried. Either you were convicted or you weren't. It's public record sort of a thing. So if that helps at all.
Representative Holby, did you have your hand up?
I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Representative. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kenner, others have expressed sentiments that I think I conveyed perhaps too forcefully last time, and I think they're legitimate. I walk through, for what it's worth, I share your concerns. All of my concerns have been satisfied. To the extent there is still a potential risk, I think it's theoretical. I'm convinced that in practice it will likely never, my fears will never be realized in application, and I'm very comfortable with the bill as is.
There's always a risk, and I think you can always foolishly represent yourself in any hearing or court, so I would definitely want as much help as I could get. Representative Holby.
I'm sorry, I was going to pass, but after Representative Barton's comments, I just have to share a comment that, you know, there, in many special aspects of administrative law or labor law, there are experts in those fields that operate within unions at the national level and some probably at the state level that they're really specialists in a particular type of administrative process or a particular type of employment law. And sometimes they, and in fact, the administrative law judges are not always lawyers as well. And so sometimes there's a risk with having a bad lawyer, too, that doesn't understand that particular type of law. So,
yeah. Even if they are licensed in the state of Oregon.
Absolutely.
All right. Any further questions of these good people? All right. Thank you. Well, with that, is there any further discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? And what was the vote?
It was unanimous in committee, 28-2 on the Senate floor.
28-2. There were two. Does this merit the consent calendar, or would we like to have a conversation on the floor?
Probably should, if there was two.
Who would like to carry the bill? Anyone want to volunteer?
I'll carry the bill.
Thank you, Representative Esquivel. You're always there for me. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 383. Anything for Representative Cameron?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to publicly thank all the representatives on the committee for their contributions yesterday to the Love Box pack, and we packed over 400 boxes, raised over $4,000 in postage, and thank all of you. And you can always continue to donate postage to Love Boxes for our troops. They can use it. It's an ongoing project.
Are you thank still you. Taking money?
Absolutely.
Right, well, we'll again, Cameron, I'd just like to thank you for your tireless efforts on this. You really led the way on it, and we appreciate all that. All the work you're doing on behalf of the veterans and the good people out there in harm's way protecting this great country.
Thank you.
And I'll echo that. I saw his staff yesterday and some of the staff from the minority office out there with just stacks of stamps. They've been all over town driving your car, as a matter of fact. I think you might have a couple parking tickets to prove it, but those ladies really worked hard, and you guys did a great job. Thanks for allowing us to just simply write a check and participate. You did a great job.
Any further discussion? I further go to the order.
All right, Virgin.